Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner, narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by Eric Messner, Katie Karkoff, Michael Glenn, Stephen Carpenter, Alexander Strain, Thomas Penny, Mort Shelby, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Dylan Lynch, Thomas Keegan, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, Joe Brack, Colleen Delaney, Elizabeth Jernigan, Yasmin Toison, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, and Johann Detweiler. The Loner, Book 4, The Big Gundown. The sound of horses made the boy look up from the puppies squirming in the basket. He saw three riders coming toward the isolated adobe ranch house. The morning sun was behind them, so all the boy could make out were the black, centaur-like shapes of men and horses. He was on his knees beside the basket. He had been playing with the month-old pups. A coyote had gotten their mother a couple of days earlier, and the boy's father had said that the critters were too small to survive without her. Best just to smash their heads in and be done with it, he'd said. The boy was already crying over what had happened to the mama dog, and his sobs had gotten even harder when he heard his pa say that. Then his mother had put a hand on his shoulder.
Don't worry, Cyrus. We'll see if we can nurse him through. I can soak a rag in milk and let him suck on it.
The boy's father had just shaken his head as if that was the most loco thing he'd ever heard, but he didn't argue. The boy was only 5 years old. But he had already figured out that when his ma's back stiffened up like that, and she got that look in her eye, his pa never argued with her. The boy was just glad that he still had the pups, and so far, they seemed to be doing fine. He stood up and hurried to the open door of the low, sprawling ranch house.
Rider's coming, Ma!
She came out of the house, wiping her hands on a rag, and looked at the three men on horseback, who were now about 50 yards from the house.
Go fetch your pa, Cyrus.
Cyrus nodded and ran around the house. His paw was in the barn out back, tending to chores. The four Mexican hands who rode for the spread were already out on the range. When Cyrus was halfway to the barn, he saw a muzzle flash through the open double doors. He skidded to a stop, his eyes widening in surprise and fear as a man he had never seen before stepped out of the barn. Smoke curled from the barrel of the gun in the man's hand as he looked at Cyrus, and a grin spread across the hardened, beard-stubbled face. Cyrus whirled around and ran back toward the front of the house. He heard the familiar sound of the family shotgun.
Ma!
He rounded the corner and came to an abrupt halt again. He saw that the three riders had reached the house and dismounted. One of them had hold of Cyrus's mother, while another wrenched the shotgun out of her hand. All three of the men were laughing, and none of them appeared to be hurt. Cyrus knew that if his ma had shot at them with the greener, she must have missed. The man holding the reins of all three horses noticed Cyrus and grinned at him, just like the man who had come out of the barn. This man motioned toward him.
Come on over here, boy. These your pups?
Cyrus's ma struggled in the grip of the man holding her.
Run, Cyrus! Run!
The man who had just spoken to him drew his gun.
Don't you do it, son. Not if you don't want something bad to happen to your ma.
You leave her alone! Don't bother them pups, neither!
That show of defiance brought more laughter from all of them, including the man from the barn, who had just come around the corner of the house behind Cyrus. He gave Cyrus a hard shove that sent the boy stumbling forward.
You take care of that fella we saw going in the barn, Brentwood?
Sure did. He won't be bothering us.
Good. Man, I reckon we can take our time then. And enjoy these folks' hospitality for a while before we ride on to Bisbee to meet up with a colonel.
Cyrus knew that a colonel was some kind of soldier. He had heard his pa talk about how his grandpa had fought in a big war with a colonel named Custer. but these men didn't look like any soldiers he had ever seen. They were all dirty and wore rough clothes, and they were mean. You could just tell it. The meanness came off them like a stink.
Just take what you want. Only don't hurt us. That's all I ask of you. Don't hurt us.
Oh, wow. We wouldn't think of it, ma'am. But we'll sure enough take what we want. You can damn well count on that.
The other three seemed to think that was funny for some reason. The one holding Cyrus's ma ran his hand over her chest, squeezing so hard it hurt. She turned pale under the tan that the Arizona sun had given her since she and her husband had started the ranch 5 years ago. She had given birth there, a long way from town or any other woman, with no one but her man to help her. Cyrus didn't know all that, and wouldn't have understood it if he did. But he knew that his ma was really, really brave, and if these men had her scared, they had to be mighty bad.
Culp! Come over here!
The man holding the empty shotgun tossed the weapon aside. Cyrus's pa would have been upset if he had seen that. He always said you had to keep guns clean, that you had to take care of them if you wanted them to take care of you. The leader was grinning down at the puppies in the basket.
Any of you boys need some, target practice?
Culp, get one of those pups and you heave it as high in the air as you can. I reckon that'll be some target.
Horror washed over Cyrus as he finally realized what was about to happen. He stared as Culp bent over and took one of the puppies from the basket. Cyrus ran toward Culp.
Leave my puppies alone, you son of a bitch!
Brentwood lifted a foot and kicked Cyrus in the side as the boy went past him. The kick sent Cyrus rolling across the ground. He came to a stop on his belly and looked up to see Ma trying to get loose from the man who held her. She would run to Cyrus's side, but the man wouldn't let her go. The leader wiggled the fingers of his right hand over the butt of the gun that stuck up from the holster on his hip.
I'll bet I can blow that pup to pieces before it ever hits the ground. Why, there's enough of them in that basket. We can all take a turn.
And we'll take turns with the boy's ma.
You're damn right.
The leader crouched slightly, ready to draw.
All right, when I say go...
Go ahead and say it.
That was a new voice Cyrus had never heard before. He looked back over his shoulder and saw a stranger standing at the corner of the house. A tall man in a buckskin shirt and a broad-brimmed brown hat, who stood there with his thumbs hooked in his gun belt, like he didn't have a care in the world. The hat shaded his face, so Cyrus couldn't see it all that well, but he saw blonde hair curling around the man's ears and down the back of his neck.
Who the hell?
Go ahead. I'm betting I can kill all four of you before that puppy hits the ground. What do you think?
Kill him!
It was amazing how much easier it was to live when you weren't afraid to die. The man called Kid Morgan had learned that lesson and learned it well. He had been through hell on earth already. The next world couldn't hold anything worse than the crucible of fire through which he had already passed. Now, whenever he faced death, a great calmness descended upon him. At the moment, the only thing that concerned him was getting lead in all four of the men before they killed him, so that they couldn't hurt the woman or the boy after he was gone. With a whisper of steel on leather, the Colt on his hip came out of its holster, seeming to leap into his hand of its own accord with a flicker of movement faster than the eye could follow. He went for the loudmouthed leader first, the man who thought it would be funny to blast a helpless puppy out of the air. If there had been time, the kid might have permitted himself a second of satisfaction at the way the man's face caved in on itself as a .45 slug pulped his nose and bored into his brain. By the time that happened, the kid had already shifted his aim and fired again, sending a bullet into the chest of the man holding the horses. As that man collapsed, the kid pivoted and went for the hombre with the puppy. The man didn't toss the little dog into the air as the leader had told him to. Instead, he dropped the pup to the ground and clawed at the gun on his hip. He hadn't cleared leather by the time the kid's third shot punched into his guts and doubled him over. Three of the bastards down, and not one of them had gotten off a shot. Not bad. But the fourth man got off a shot, and the kid felt a hammer blow on his left thigh. The slug's impact knocked him halfway around, but he stayed on his feet and swung his Colt toward the fourth man. The kid's finger froze on the trigger. The man had one arm looped around the woman's neck, holding her in front of him. The kid couldn't fire without hitting her, and the son of a bitch knew it. The gunman didn't have any such worries, and a vicious leer appeared on his face as he drew a bead to put his next bullet dead center in the kid's body. A man whose face was covered with blood lurched through the open door of the ranch house behind the would-be killer. He held something in his hands, and the morning sun reflected off it as he plunged it in the gunman's back. The gunman staggered forward. The woman twisted out of his grip and threw herself on the ground, covering the little boy's body with her own. The kid's revolver slammed out another shot. The fourth gunman jerked and pitched forward, landing on his face. The handle of a pitchfork stuck up from his back, the tines buried deep.
Sean!
The woman leaped up and ran to the man with blood all over his face, throwing her arms around him.
Oh my God! You're alive! I thought... But you're hurt.
That's not as bad as it looks. Cyrus, boy, you all right?
The youngster scrambled to his feet and dashed over to his parents. They both went to a knee to fold their arms around the sobbing boy. The kid was relieved. He still had one round in the Colt cylinder. Limping heavily as he felt blood trickling warmly down his wounded leg, he went to each of the gunmen in turn and checked to make sure that they were all dead. Three of them were. The man who was gut shot was still alive, but he was unconscious and would never wake up again, if he was lucky. If not, he would come to and then die in agony in an hour or so. With the threat over, at least for the moment, the kid opened the gun and dumped the empties into the palm of his hand. He took fresh cartridges from the loops on his belt and thumbed them into the cylinder, leaving one chamber empty for the hammer to rest on, as usual. Then he pouched the iron and turned toward the family. The pup that had been taken out of the basket sniffed and fumbled around his feet. The kid leaned over, fighting the dizziness he felt from the loss of blood, and scooped up the little animal.
Here you go, son.
The kid held the puppy out to the little boy.
Your pup's fine.
The man stood up, leaving his wife and son kneeling on the sandy ground with the now frolicking puppy.
I don't know how to thank you, mister.
I told you to stay in the barn. Under the circumstances, though, I suppose it's a good thing you didn't. Appreciate you giving me a hand.
You saved the lives of my family and my life too, and you're thanking me?
The man looked down in concern at the kid's wounded leg.
And you're hurt!
The kid was about to say it was nothing, when he realized how stupid that was. He had a bullet hole in his leg, and the slug seemed to have gone all the way through. He had lost a lot of blood, and the world was starting to spin funny. He started to say something, but before he could get any of the words out, the ground seemed to tilt sharply under his feet. He felt himself falling and crashed to the ground. Consciousness began to seep back into the kid's brain. He wasn't sure where he was, but he knew the place was warm and soft, and he wanted to just keep his eyes closed, settle down into those comforting surroundings, and never leave. He imagined this was what death must be like. The pain brought him back. Pain was life. Life was pain. He opened his eyes. The boy was staring at him from a distance of a couple feet.
Ma, he's awake!
At least Cyrus had turned away before he yelled. The kid was grateful for that much. Cyrus turned back to the kid.
Howdy, mister. How do you feel?
The kid's head hurt, and his leg felt even worse. It had a dull throb that went through him with every beat of his heart. But he managed to put a faint smile on his face.
I'm all right.
No, you're not.
That comment came from the woman, who now leaned over him with a concerned expression on her face. The kid was vaguely aware that she was pretty, with deep brown eyes and a mass of brown hair around her face and shoulders. She rested a hand on his forehead.
You've got a fever. That wound in your leg must be infected.
You've got to clean it out good. Carbolic acid, or if you don't have any, plenty of whiskey.
That we've got.
It was the man's voice. He moved up on the other side of the bed where the kid lay. Crimson still stained his face here and there, but most of the blood was gone. The woman must have cleaned it and then wrapped a bandage around her husband's head where the bullet had grazed him. The man had been bleeding like a stuck pig when the kid found him in the barn, but that was common with head wounds. It had taken only a second for the kid to determine that the injury probably wasn't serious. The man had been stunned, only half conscious, and the kid had told him to stay there while he went to deal with the men who had invaded the ranch. Those bastards were all dead now. The kid remembered that much. He remembered being shot in the leg, too. He couldn't afford to lose it. A crippled gunfighter was a dead gunfighter, and there were already too many men in the world who wanted to test their speed against the man called Kid Morgan.
Get a cloth. Soak it in whiskey. Run it all the way through the hole.
That'll hurt like blazes, mister.
Don't care. Just do it. Then pour more whiskey on the wounds.
The man and woman looked at each other, and the man shrugged.
I reckon he probably knows what he's talking about. Man like him's probably been shot before now.
A man like him. The fellow probably didn't mean anything by it. He was right, though. The kid had been shot before. He knew about cleaning wounds and how to patch them up. It was a necessary skill when a man lived the life of a lone, drifting gunfighter.
Cyrus, you go outside and play now.
Aw, Mom, can't I stay and watch?
No, you can't. Now do like I told you and scoot.
When the boy was gone, the woman pulled down the sheet that covered the kid. He felt a momentary surge of embarrassment when he realized that he was pretty much naked, but the woman was brisk and businesslike about what she was doing, which helped. She went to fetch a clean cloth, and the man came back with a bottle of whiskey and what looked like the ramrod from an old muzzle-loading rifle.
This ought to do.
The woman leaned over the bed.
Let me take this bandage off.
When she lifted the bandage, the kid thought he smelled the rot setting in already. That was probably just his imagination, as there really hadn't been time for the wound to fester that much.
What day is it?
Same day it was you got shot, mister. You were out for a couple hours, that's all.
That was long enough. The kid didn't like the idea that he'd been helpless during that time, although clearly he had nothing to fear from these people. He had saved their lives, after all. The woman drenched the cloth with whiskey and wrapped it around the end of the ramrod.
Are you sure about this?
Go ahead.
Wait a minute.
The man took the bottle from his wife, slipped his other hand under the kid's head, and lifted it.
Take a swig of this first.
Good idea.
The man tipped the bottle to the kid's lips. It burned all the way down his gullet. But that fire was nothing compared to the blaze that seared his leg as the woman pushed the whiskey-soaked rag through the wound. The kid's head tilted back against the pillow. He closed his eyes and felt the cords in his neck standing out as he clenched his teeth against the pain.
Oh, God, Sean, he's bleeding again.
Of course he is. Don't worry about it, Franny. The blood will help clean the wound.
The kid opened his eyes to look up at them.
Oh, sorry about the sheets.
Don't worry about that. That's a small price to pay for the lives of my family.
The woman withdrew the ramrod, and the kid nodded toward his leg.
Pour the whiskey on it. Soak it good.
Sean did so. As the woman wrapped fresh bandages around his thigh, a wave of drowsiness began to steal over him.
I'm Sean Williams. This is my wife, Franny, and you've met our boy, Cyrus. You don't have to tell us your name, though. I know it's sometimes not considered polite to ask about such things.
I don't mind. Name's Morgan. They call me Kid Morgan.
The gunman?
Yeah. Lucky for you, right?
Damn right. We owe you our lives.
Franny had another wet cloth, wet with water this time, not whiskey. She wiped its cool softness across the kid's brow. The gentle touch felt wonderful.
You sleep now, Mr. Morgan. Just rest, and we'll take care of you.
Those men...
Don't worry about them. I've already dragged them off behind the barn. I'll bury them. Although it's more than they deserve, I ought to just leave them for the buzzards.
Whether the dead men were buried or not wasn't what concerned the kid. What he was worried about was that they might have friends who would come looking for them. But the darkness came up and carried him away again before he could say anything more. For an unknowable time after that, the kid drifted in and out of consciousness. He woke up once, and it seemed that he had been lying there in the bed for years. He woke up the next time, and it was as if only moments had passed since the thunder of guns and the acrid tang of gun smoke filled the air. Sometimes he recognized the blurry faces of the man and woman who fed him and changed his bandages and took care of him, and other times they seemed like perfect strangers to him. And there was the little boy, Cyrus, was that his name? Who stood and watched with a tentative smile on his face, sometimes with a fat little puppy clutched in his arms. The kid remembered something about a puppy, but he wasn't sure what it was. He knew he was sick because he could see the fear in the eyes of the woman as she leaned over him and wiped his forehead with a cool, damp rag. She was afraid he was going to die. The kid wasn't afraid. The only thing death meant to him was that he would see the woman he loved again. He would see Rebel. Unless, of course, all the blood on his hands meant that he would be headed down instead of up. it might be the devil waiting for him on the other side, instead of St. Peter. To be honest, the kid wouldn't be surprised either way. Finally, the time came when the kid opened his eyes, and not only was his vision clear, but his mind was too. He remembered everything in detail. The way he had approached the ranch, just drifting, looking for a place where he could water his horse and maybe get a hot meal. The man he had seen sneaking into the back of the barn. The ominous sound of the shot he'd heard a moment later. Curiosity had driven the kid to slip through the rear door of the barn himself. He had found a man who looked like a rancher, probably the owner of this place, sprawled on the ground with a pool of blood around his head. The wound wasn't as bad as it looked, and as the man began to come around, the kid had told him to stay put, then gone to see what the screams and the other shots were about. Rage had filled him as he saw how the woman was being manhandled. When the intruders threatened the pups and kicked the little boy, the kid knew that if he didn't step in, those bastards wouldn't leave anybody alive when they rode off and left the ranch behind them. The kid didn't go out of his way to look for trouble. He didn't have to. It always seemed to find him. But he didn't turn his back and walk away from it either. He heard a puppy and looked toward the open doorway. The boy was just outside, playing with the pups. He had a short piece of rope in his hand, and all four puppies had hold of it, trying to pull it away from him. The kid smiled. It looked like fun. Growing up in a fancy house on Boston's Beacon Hill, he'd never had a dog. His stepfather, the man he had believed for many years was his real father, was a good man, but he hadn't been much for animals, especially not in a house. That was just one of the things the kid had missed growing up and had not even realized until years later. Franny Williams came into the kid's view as she crossed the room to stand in the doorway and look out at her son playing with the puppies.
I swear, Cyrus, you spend so much time with those pups, I think you're going to start growling and yipping just like them.
I wouldn't want to be a dog, Ma. I like eating the food you fix for us.
Cyrus glanced past her skirts then and spotted the kid watching them.
Mom, Mr. Morgan's awake again.
Franny turned quickly from the door and came across the room toward the bed. She wore an anxious expression as she bent over the kid.
Mr. Morgan, how'd he feel?
She rested a hand on his forehead.
You're cool. The fever's broken at last.
How long?
How long have you been here? 4 days. You were so sick, we thought we were going to lose you.
The kid let his head sag back against the pillow. He wasn't surprised by what she had just told him. He had sensed that he had lost a considerable chunk of time while he was out of his head with the fever.
But you're going to be all right now. The fever's broken, and I'll bet you'll be up and around before you know it.
The kid hoped that was true. For a man who lived the life he did, to be flat on his back was just asking for trouble.
Those men...
Franny's expression clouded at the kid's words. Cyrus had come inside and followed her over to the bed. She looked at him now.
Run on back outside and play, Cyrus.
But, Ma, I want to talk to Mr. Morgan.
There'll be plenty of time for you to talk to Mr. Morgan later. Now scoot, like I told you.
I'm all the time having to scoot.
Franny turned back to the kid.
If you're talking about those horrible gunmen, Sean buried them, like you said he would.
Where?
Up in our north pasture.
But still on your range.
Of course. He wouldn't have taken them on to somebody else's land to bury him.
Why didn't he take them to the nearest town?
That would be Bisbee, which is 2 days from here by wagon. It may not be the height of summer yet, Mr. Morgan, but it's still too warm to spend 2 days on the road with some dead men.
The kid couldn't argue with that. He was worried, though, that if friends of the dead men came looking for them, they might find the graves and figure out what had happened. That could mean bad trouble for the Williams family.
Did he dig 4 graves or just one?
He didn't actually dig any graves. He hollowed out under the bank of an arroyo a couple miles from here and then caved it in on top of the bodies. No one knows they're there, except for the vaqueros who work for us.
You can trust them?
Of course. All 4 of them have been with us for 5 years, ever since we came here. I'd trust them with my life. More importantly, I'd trust them with the lives of my husband and son.
That's just what you're doing.
I know that. Sean said we might be in danger if anybody found out what happened here. That's why he was so careful to put the bodies where nobody would ever find them. He led their horses about 5 miles from here and turned them loose, too. It's ridiculous. We're only a few years away from a brand new century, and yet out here, it seems like nothing has changed.
We have to worry about Apaches and banditos raiding from across the border. We have gunmen like those four passing through. And the only law that really means anything...
is the law of the gun.
I mean no offense, Mr. Morgan. Truly, I don't. You saved our lives, and I can't ever repay you for that. But if you hadn't been faster on the draw than those men, if you hadn't been better at killing than they were, well, I guess none of us would still be here. It's a shame that life comes down to that.
Yes, ma'am. I agree with you. But it's always been like that, and I suppose it always will be, at least to a certain extent.
You don't exactly talk like a gunfighter, Mr. Morgan. You seem more like an educated man.
A man can be handy with a gun and still be educated.
There I go again, saying things that sound worse than I really intended them.
Don't worry about it, ma'am. I'm in your debt as much as you are in mine. You and your husband saved my life.
You wouldn't have been hurt if it wasn't for us.
No, ma'am, that's not right. I wouldn't have been hurt if it wasn't for those four men who rode in just before I did. They're the ones who caused all the trouble, and it doesn't make any sense to blame yourself for what they did.
I know. Oh, my goodness. I'm about to talk your ear off, and here you are just now starting to recover from the awful fever. I bet you're thirsty.
Yes, ma'am. Parched.
I'll get you some water. And how about some food?
I could do with something to eat.
Stay right there.
I don't think I'll be going anywhere just yet.
But soon, he hoped. He needed to get back on his feet just as soon as he could, before trouble came calling again, as it always did. By evening, the kid was sitting up in the bed with pillows propped behind him. When Sean Williams came in, the rancher grinned to see him doing so well and came over to shake hands.
Haven't had a chance to properly thank you yet, Mr. Morgan. You've been, out of your head for a while, at least most of the time.
I know. There's no thanks necessary. You and Mrs. Williams saved my life.
After you saved ours.
The kid gestured toward the bandage that Sean still wore around his head.
How's that bullet graze?
Just about healed up. I probably don't even need the bandage anymore.
Sean inclined his head toward the stove, where Franny was stirring a pot of stew with her back to them.
But she thinks it's a good idea.
I heard that, you know.
Anyway, I'm fine, and I'm glad to see that you're on the mend too, Mr. Morgan.
Call me Kid.
That's all? Kid?
It's enough.
Sure. I didn't mean anything by it.
You haven't had any blurred vision, double vision, anything like that?
No.
Any loss of memory?
No. Those sound like questions a doctor would ask. You're not...
A doctor? Not hardly. I've just been around men who had head wounds before, and sometimes they didn't realize just how badly they were hurt until a few days later.
Well, I'm fine. I had a headache for the first day, but once that went away, I've never been better.
Sean held up his hand with his thumb and forefinger almost touching.
There's something about coming this close to dying that makes a man really appreciate living, you know?
The kid nodded. He knew all right. Despite the fatalism that gripped him most of the time, he had experienced those moments of sheer exhilaration that sometimes followed a brush with death. He had drawn in a deep breath and realized that the air had never smelled sweeter, even though a tinge of gun smoke might linger in it.
I was wondering about my horse.
I found him picking it up on the hill behind the barn. He's in there now with my horses. Don't worry, we've been taking good care of him. Heck, Cyrus brushes him twice a day.
I'm much obliged. Mrs. Williams told me about what you did with those four men.
Seemed like that would be the smart thing. I didn't want anybody to know that those varmints had been here.
That's right. If anybody comes looking for them, you never saw them.
I've talked about that with Franny and the boy and with the fellows who work for me. We're all agreed. We'll keep our mouths shut.
No other strangers have been around?
Nope. It's been peaceful around here. Just the way I like it.
The kid hoped it stayed that way.
The stew's ready.
Franny stepped to the doorway.
Cyrus! Supper!
That's funny. I thought he was just right outside with the puppies. The pups are here, but I don't see Cyrus.
The kid felt his gut clench suddenly. Sean looked worried, too. He left the bedside and went over to the door as Franny walked farther outside.
Franny, get back in here.
She turned to look at him.
But I can't find Cyrus.
I'll find him.
Sean picked up the Winchester he had leaned against the wall beside the door when he came in. He strode out, took Franny's arm, and gently steered her back into the house. The kid's jaw was tight. He wished he could go out there with Sean. His eyes went to the gun belt that was coiled nearby and placed on a chair beside the bed, along with the holstered Colt. The gun was in reach if he needed it. He looked around the room for something he could use as a crutch if he had to. Holding the rifle slanted across his chest, Sean walked away from the house.
Cyrus! Cyrus!
I'm here, Pa!
Relief washed through the kid as he heard the little boy's voice call from somewhere fairly close by.
But we got company!
The kid tensed again. Out here, company wasn't necessarily a good thing. In fact, chances were it could mean trouble. He watched through the open doorway and saw Cyrus emerge from some brush about 100 yards away from the ranch house. As the boy had said, he wasn't alone. A man on horseback followed him, and then several more riders came out of the brush. As Cyrus ran toward the house, the men followed him, riding single file in a slow, deliberate pace.
Mrs. Williams, is there another rifle here in the house?
There is. I'll fetch it. For myself.
I was thinking you'd better let me have it.
I can handle a gun, Mr. Morgan. I know one of those men managed to knock the shotgun aside just as I pulled the trigger the other day, but they took me by surprise.
3 guns were better than 2, he decided. He jerked his head in a nod.
All right.
He reached over, slipped the Colt out of its holster, and held it at his side, just out of sight under the sheet. He didn't like this at all. If trouble broke out, he would have a limited field of fire, just what he could see through the doorway. And the boy was out there, along with Sean. It was possible there was nothing to worry about, he reminded himself. The strangers might be peaceful. They could just be passing through, as he himself had been a few days earlier. The kid didn't believe it for a second, but it was possible. Cyrus pounded to a stop next to his father and looked up at Sean.
See, Pop? I told you we had company.
The man who was in the lead reined in. He reached up and tugged on the brim of his hat as he nodded.
Good evening to you, sir. Hope we didn't interrupt your supper.
We were just about to sit down and eat. You're welcome to join us.
It was the sort of invitation you issued out there on the frontier as a matter of habit, no matter who had come to call. If a band of Hottentots showed up on your doorstep at dinner time, the kid thought, you'd just naturally ask them to light and sit a spell and have something to eat. The man shook his head. He wore a fringed shirt of soft buckskin, blue cavalry trousers with a yellow stripe up the outside of the legs, high-topped black boots, and a cream-colored hat with a couple of tassels attached to the band. The hat also sported the crossed sabers insignia that meant the wearer had been part of a cavalry outfit at one time. He might still be in the army, although the men with him all wore civilian clothes. From what the kid could see of them, he didn't like them. They looked like the same sort of hard cases as the one who had invaded the Williams Ranch a few days earlier.
We're much obliged for the offer. We wouldn't want to put any of you out, though. And we have our own supplies.
Suit yourself. You're welcome to water your horses, though.
The stranger smiled. Dark hair curled out from under the cavalry hat, and he sported a pointed goatee of the same color.
Now, we'll take you up on that kind offer.
He gestured for his men to move their horses up to the water trough and let them drink.
I'd like to ask you a question, too, if you don't mind.
I reckon that'll be all right.
We're on our way up the San Pedro to the Santa Catalinas. Some friends of ours were supposed to meet us in Bisbee and come with us. They didn't show up, and I was wondering if you might have seen them pass through here. 4 men, Hudgens, Culp, Brentwood, and Dobbs.
Those names don't mean a thing to me, mister, but I can tell you there haven't been any strangers passed through here for a month or more. Sorry.
They didn't stop just to water their horses or anything like that?
Nope.
Well, it's worth asking, I suppose. If they do happen to come by here, can you tell them that the Colonel was asking about them?
And that would be you?
Colonel Gideon Black. At your service, sir.
Are you a real soldier, mister?
I was, son. I'm no longer in the army, though.
But you were a real colonel?
That's enough, Cyrus. Run on in the house.
The rest of the men had watered their horses, and the light was fading from the sky. Franny hadn't lit the lamps inside the house yet, and the kid thought that was a good thing, because the men outside probably couldn't see him watching them from the shadows. Nor would they be able to see Franny standing beside a window where the shutter was open a couple of inches, clutching a rifle in her hands, ready to use it if she needed to. Colonel Black let his horse drink as well, then lifted a hand in farewell.
Move out!
The group traveled off to the east, toward the San Pedro River. Sean stayed outside for quite a while, watching them go. Finally, he came back inside. Then, and only then, did the kid holster his gun.
Well, they're gone.
You sure of that? They're not doubling back?
I don't think so. I could see their dust for quite a ways. If they plan on doubling back, they went to a lot of trouble to make me think they weren't.
They didn't look like soldiers, Pa.
Sean hung the Winchester on a couple of pegs near the door.
That's because they weren't.
But that man was a colonel.
Yeah. He said he wasn't in the army anymore. That means he's not a real colonel anymore, no matter what he calls himself.
Oh. I understand. I guess.
The kid understood. Colonel Black was something of a wild card. But he had seen plenty of men who looked like the ones who'd been with the former officer. He knew without anyone having to tell him that they were outlaws, and that didn't surprise him a bit, considering the circumstances under which he had killed their four missing friends. The question now was whether they had believed Sean and would ride on, or would they be paying a return visit to the Williams Ranch? To the kid's relief, the men didn't come back. Laid up as he wasn't sure if he would have been able to handle them, even with help from Sean and the four vaqueros. The rancher and his men were tough, sure. They had to be in order to survive out here. But those men with Colonel Black were killers. Stone-cold killers. Sean called his vaqueros into the house when they rode in a short time later and told them what had happened. He gave orders for them to set up guard shifts so that someone would be awake and keeping an eye on the place all night. That was a smart move, the kid thought, and he hadn't even had to suggest it to the rancher. Sean seemed to be a pretty canny young man. The stew tasted as good as it smelled, and as the kid ate, he felt strength flowing back into him. It would take a while, but he was confident that he was on the mend. He slept soundly that night, a good, honest sleep instead of the unconsciousness that had gripped him before. The rest revitalized him, so that when he awoke the next morning, he was actually anxious to get out of bed and try his legs again. Franny wouldn't hear of that, however, and the kid sensed that she was so strong-willed that arguing wouldn't do any good, so he didn't bother. He just lay there and rested, and let her fill him full of good food for a couple of more days. While that was going on, he checked frequently with Sean to find out if he or any of the ranch hands had seen any sign of Colonel Black and his men. Sean reported that they hadn't. On the third day after he regained consciousness, the kid was too restless to stay in bed any longer. Franny brought him a heavy hickory cane with a carved wolf's head for a grip.
This cane belonged to my grandfather. Be careful when you use it.
I'll take good care of it while I'm borrowing it.
I'm not worried about the cane. I don't want you falling down and hurting yourself even worse.
That's not going to happen.
The kid grinned at Cyrus, who was standing nearby watching with a rapt expression on his face.
I'll have Cyrus close by to give me a hand if I need one. Won't I, son?
You bet, Mr. Morgan!
The kid talked Franny into turning around while he pulled his clothes on. Cyrus helped him with his boots. Then the kid got a good grip on the cane and pushed himself to his feet. He felt a twinge of pain in his wounded leg, but it didn't buckle. He took a tentative step, then another, and another, keeping as much of his weight off the injured leg as he could. Suddenly, he swayed a little, but Cyrus was right there, so that the kid was able to rest his free hand on the boy's shoulder and balance himself.
Ma?
Franny turned around and fixed the kid with a stern stare.
I think that's enough for now, Mr. Morgan.
I'm going to the door and back.
The kid knew he was being stubborn, but he didn't care. He wanted to push himself, to find out just how much he could do.
All right, but take it slow and easy.
With the cane in one hand and the other hand on Cyrus's shoulder, the kid walked slowly to the door. By the time he got there, his heart was pounding and he felt dizzy. He stood there, looking out and catching his breath for a moment, and then turned to make his way back to the bed. Franny was there to take his arm and help him lie down again.
You tried to do too much, didn't you?
No. A man's got to push himself. If he's satisfied with what's easy, that'll never be enough.
You're talking to a woman who married a man determined to start a ranch in the middle of nowhere. I know all about a man pushing himself.
The kid tried to keep his eyes open, but the lids sagged closed anyway. Next time, he would walk farther and do more. And the time after that. And the time after that. He dozed off with that thought in his head. By the time three more days had gone by, the pain in the kid's leg was almost gone. Using the wolf's head cane, he could get around everywhere in the ranch house and in the yard outside. With Cyrus keeping an eye on him and helping him if necessary, he walked over to the barn to check on his horse and was glad to see that the buckskin was being well cared for. He hadn't expected anything less from Sean and the ranch hands, but it was good to see that with his own eyes. Cyrus never went far from his side, and the boy was full of questions.
Where are you from?
Oh, here and there.
He didn't mention that once he'd been an Eastern-born and raised businessman named Conrad Browning, nor did he say anything about his real father being Frank Morgan, the notorious gunfighter known as the Drifter, or explain that he had once been married to a beautiful young woman named Rebel, who had been taken from him tragically because of greed and a lust for vengeance. All those things had gone into shaping the man who was now known only as Kid Morgan, who had developed a reputation of his own as a gunfighter. Only a handful of people knew the truth, knew that he had turned his back on a whole other life, and that was the way the kid wanted it. He was content to drift, a loner who wasn't headed anywhere in particular. But even a loner could not live totally isolated. He had to run into people from time to time, just as he had come across this ranch, and where there were people, there was trouble. The kid knew that, and he felt a nagging curiosity about the man called Colonel Gideon Black. It was none of his business, of course. But he wondered why an ex-army man would team up with a bunch of gun wolves like the men who had accompanied him the other day. Not to mention the ones now buried in that arroyo, who had planned to meet the colonel in Bisbee. A youngster like Cyrus wouldn't understand any of that, so the kid didn't try to explain it to him. He just gave noncommittal answers to Cyrus's questions about who he was and where he had come from. Then there was the question that he was hoping Cyrus wouldn't ask, but asked anyway.
Can you teach me how to use a gun like you, Mr. Morgan?
They were standing by the corral fence, watching one of the vaqueros work with a balky horse, trying to get it used to wearing a saddle. The kid looked down at the boy.
It ought to be your Pa's job to teach you to shoot, Cyrus.
Yeah, but Pa can't shoot like you do, Mr. Morgan. I never saw anything like it when you killed those four men. That's what I want to do.
You don't want to kill anybody, Cyrus. Not unless you have to protect your life or the life of someone you love.
Well, then, I want to be able to do that.
It was certainly a worthwhile ability to have, the kid reflected. Even though civilization had made a lot of inroads, and people liked to talk about how the turn of the century would mark the beginning of a new, kinder, and gentler era, the kid knew that it was a bunch of bullshit. Life was still harsh and dangerous, especially out here on the frontier, and that wasn't likely to change anytime soon. In many ways, so-called civilization just meant surrendering to the wolves and hoping that they wouldn't devour you. That never worked.
Maybe you should start by learning how to shoot a rifle. Have you ever used one before?
Nope. Ma says I'm too little.
What's your Pa say?
Whatever Ma says. Whenever she's around anyway.
I'll have a talk with him. Can't hurt.
Thanks, Mr. Morgan! I really would like to learn how to draw and shoot a handgun like you, though.
I hope you never have to.
That evening, when Sean Williams went outside to have a last look around the place after supper, the kid followed him. The kid didn't take the wolf's head cane with him, since he didn't need it anymore. He felt a little twinge of pain in his leg from time to time, but the wound had healed, and his leg was strong again.
Cyrus told me he wants to learn how to shoot.
The kid and Sean started walking toward the corral. An arch of reddish gold in the western sky marked the place where the sun had set. Sean glanced over at him.
I intend on getting around to teaching him one of these days.
I figured as much. The thing is, he wants to learn how to shoot like I do.
No offense, Mr. Morgan. You know how much we appreciate what you did for us, but I'm not sure I'd ever want Cyrus learning how to be a... well, a...
gunfighter?
To be honest, yes. I thought your name sounded familiar, so I asked the hands if any of them had ever heard of you. Pablo said he thought you were the man who killed Jack Trace over in New Mexico territory a while back.
That was me, all right. Didn't have much choice in the matter.
I never said you did. But I know how trouble seems to follow a man like you.
Not always. Sometimes I walk into it.
I know. What I'm saying sounds bad. Sounds like we're not obliged to you for saving our lives, but...
The kid raised a hand to stop him.
One thing doesn't have anything to do with the other. I saved your lives, but you and your wife saved mine. We're even on that score.
You wouldn't have gotten hurt if not for us.
I already had this conversation with Mrs. Williams. Look, Sean. Don't worry about it. I don't want to teach Cyrus how to be a gunfighter either. In fact, I'm thinking it might be a good idea for me to pull out early in the morning before he gets up.
He'd be really disappointed if he didn't get a chance to say goodbye to you.
And that might not be such a bad thing.
This part of Arizona territory, not far from the Mexican border, could be blistering hot during the day. But at night, the dry air cooled quickly, and by morning there was often a little chill lurking around the edges of dawn. That was the way it was the next morning when the kid slipped out of the house and went to the barn while the sky was still just gray in the east. His breath even fogged a little in front of his face. Sean and Franny would be glad to get their bed back, he thought. They had put a corn shuck mattress on the floor next to Cyrus's bed in the part of the room where the boy slept that was closed off by a blanket hung from a rope. After the first couple of nights, the kid had offered to bunk in with the youngster, but Franny wouldn't hear of it. He would recuperate better in a real bed, she had declared, and as usual, there was no arguing with Franny. The buckskin tossed his head in greeting when the kid walked into the barn and came up to the stall.
You're ready to get back on the trail again, aren't you, old boy? Yeah, so am I.
Sean hadn't tried to argue him out of leaving this morning. Although the kid hadn't spelled it out, they both knew that it wasn't a good idea for Cyrus to be idolizing the kid just because he was particularly good at killing. If leaving like this made Cyrus angry at him, that was fine. Cyrus didn't need to grow up wanting to be Kid Morgan. He'd do better to follow in the footsteps of his father. The kid had the buckskin saddled and ready to ride when a soft footstep made him turn swiftly toward the double doors of the barn. His hand moved with blinding speed to the butt of the gun on his hip. The reaction was all instinct, no conscious thought at all.
Whoa!
Sean took a step back.
Easy, kid. It's just me.
The rancher had a cup of coffee in one hand and a canvas bag in the other. The kid felt a little foolish when he saw that. He took his hand away from his gun and forced himself to relax.
Sorry, Sean. I didn't think anybody else was up and around yet.
You can't do anything in that house without Franny knowing about it.
Sean smiled as he came closer and offered the coffee to the kid, who took the cup gratefully.
She thought you might want some food to take with you.
He hefted the bag.
It's just some biscuits left over from last night.
Your wife's biscuits are mighty good.
And a couple of fried apple pies.
Even better. You told her I was leaving this morning?
No, but she figured it out pretty quick when you got up and slipped out. I never told her what Cyrus said yesterday. Didn't want to worry her. But if she knew, I figure she'd be grateful to you for what you're doing, kid.
I had to be moving on sometime. Today's as good a time as any.
Well, we both appreciate it. I thought I'd give you a hand saddling up, but see, you've already done it. How's your leg?
It's fine.
You know, most men would have been laid up at least twice that long with a bullet hole in their leg.
I don't like to stay in one place for too long.
Because of the chance the trouble might catch up to you?
Something like that.
Don't you get, well, lonely? Always drifting by yourself like that?
It wouldn't do any good to tell Sean that he was never really alone, the kid thought. A beautiful blonde ghost rode with him everywhere he went, always at his side, even when he wished she wasn't. The kid just shook his head.
Not to speak of?
Well, I would. Once you've got a family, I don't reckon you'd ever feel right being alone again.
The kid turned toward the buckskin. The shadows were still thick in the barn, but they might not be thick enough to conceal the look of pain and loss that he felt come over his face. He didn't want Sean to see that. Nobody could see it. It was his, and his alone. He drank the last of the coffee, handed the empty cup to Sean. Then he took the bag of food.
I'm much obliged to you and Mrs. Williams for this and for everything else.
You reckon you'll ever come back this way again, kid?
I never know where the trails will take me.
Well, if you do, be sure and stop in for a visit, you hear?
Sean stuck out his hand.
Best of luck to you.
Thanks.
The kid shook hands with the young rancher, then took hold of the buckskin's reins, put a foot in the stirrup, and swung up into the saddle. He looped the cord attached to the bag of food around the saddle horn. Sean stepped back to let the kid ride out of the barn. The kid looked around in the doorway and lifted a hand in farewell. He didn't look back again as he rode away. There was an old saying about the dawn coming up like thunder. That's the way it was out here. One minute the sun was still below the horizon. The next, it was a brilliant orange-red ball floating in the sky and flooding the landscape with light. The kid kept the buckskin moving at an easy pace toward the San Pedro River. He was only a couple of miles from the Williams spread, but already he had put the place behind him. It was a part of his past, a part that he would remember fondly in some respects, but not in others. Out of habit, he kept a close eye on the landscape around him, alert for any sign of trouble. It was pretty dry country, but there were small grassy valleys here and there where the ranchers in the area grazed their stock. Ranges of low hills framed the valleys. Miles to the north lay the grayish-blue peaks of the Dragoon Mountains. The kid had never been through those parts before, but he had talked to people who had, including Sean Williams. Up ahead were the towns of Sierra Vista, right on the river, and Bisbee, a few miles beyond it. He wasn't sure he wanted to visit either place, although it might not hurt to replenish his supplies. Because he was watching everything around him, he spotted the buzzards circling in the air to his left. The kid reined in and studied them for a moment as they wheeled through the blue sky and then dropped toward the earth, one after the other. Whatever was down there, the buzzards had decided that it was already dead, not just dying. As the kid studied the terrain from under the broad brim of his brown hat, his eyes suddenly narrowed. He saw a line meandering in a jagged path across a broad flat and recognized it as a dry wash, a common feature in that part of the country. There was nothing unusual about it. Franny Williams had said that her husband Sean had taken the bodies of the four gunmen to an arroyo about 2 miles from the ranch house and buried them by caving in the bank. The kid whipped around in the saddle and gazed back toward the Williams spread. He had come about 2 miles. And there were more buzzards arriving in the vicinity, even as he sat there. The kid tugged on the reins and turned the buckskin toward the arroyo. His boot heels prodded the horse's flanks and sent it forward at a fast trot. When he reached the arroyo, the kid dismounted and hauled his Winchester from the sheath strap to the saddle. On the other side of the saddle, an old Sharps rode in a similar sheath, but he used it for long-distance work. He was more likely to need the repeater. The kid stepped to the edge of the wash and looked down, grimacing as the stench reached him. Somebody had been digging down there, and now more than a dozen buzzards were clustered around what had been unearthed, their bald, ugly heads dipping and darting as their sharp beaks ripped strips of rotting flesh off the four corpses. The kid couldn't have recognized the men. Their tattered clothing was the only thing that still marked them as human, since the skeletons hadn't been fully exposed yet. The way the carrion-eating birds were working on them, it wouldn't be true much longer. A bitter, sour taste of revulsion welled up in the kid's throat and filled his mouth. He pointed the Winchester at the sky. The racket sent the flock of buzzards soaring into the sky with angry cries and the flapping of leathery wings. The kid lowered the rifle and wiped the back of one hand across his mouth. It didn't make the bad taste go away. This was a waste of time and bullets, he told himself, as the echoes of the shots rolled away over the Arizona landscape. He wasn't going to bury those bastards. Might as well let the buzzards have them. Buzzards had to eat too, the kid supposed. The question was, who had come along and uncovered the bodies? One obvious answer suggested itself, and the kid didn't like it at all. He liked it even less a moment later as his head jerked up and he realized that the shots he was hearing weren't the echoes of the ones he had fired to chase off the buzzards. They were a fresh burst of gunfire, followed by some sort of heavy boom, and they seemed to originate in the direction he had come from.
Oh no. The Williams.
The kid swung up onto his horse and kicked his buckskin into a hard gallop.